I would like to caution listeners that the upcoming interview touches upon various topics that some may find upsetting. In an effort to tell the real story of what's now happening in Myanmar, we encourage our guests to share as they feel comfortable doing, affirming that this platform is one that could bear the weight of their story. As traumatic as the events have obviously been for our guest, they can affect even those of us listening from a distance as well. I'll be honest, every member of our team has shed a tear at some point or another in the process of bringing these interviews to you. And similarly, you might find yourself affected by this story. If you feel that some of this content may be upsetting in what follows, maybe consider listening in stages or whatever works for you. But please listen. Please bear witness to what this guest has to say.
My guest today is the Reverend Peter Saiful, and the topic that we will be discussing is one that I don't think any of our guests have touched on this program. We will be looking at the plight of the Rohingya people, but most specifically, the plight of Christian Rohingya people who are a minority within a minority. And the good Reverend has unfortunately experienced many of the negative effects of this reality. So, Reverend, thank you very, very much for joining us and for sharing your wisdom and for sharing your experiences with the audience. I'm sure many in the audience are not familiar with you. If you could share a little bit about who you are and your background, we would appreciate that.
Thank you, sir, for having me and giving me a chance to share the situation of myself and my community here in Bangladesh. My name is Peter Saiful. I'm originally from Myanmar, living in Bangladesh. I was born in the refugee camp as well as in my family forcibly to Bangladesh in 1992. I've been living in the refugee camp as a refugee in Naipara. So currently I am serving as a pastor at the Rohingya Christian Fellowship, Bethel Church Rohingya Christian Fellowship. And beside this, I'm a human rights defender and serving as a representative of the Rohingya Christian community living in Bangladesh camps.
So there's so much that I want to unpack and so much that I want to understand. But I think we should start with before 1992. You say that you and your family were forced to flee and go to the refugee camp in 1992. Can you tell us what it was like living as a Christian within the Rohingya community before 1992?
Yeah. So what I know that my father, the Christian communities are actually, they never been able to express their identity because we have been living all together. You know, among us, there have been a radical group among the Rohingya since beginning. We have heard about the Furik Kyasoka, an armed group like an extremist group. So before 1992, we have been living in Myanmar. My father have been living in Myanmar. And when they have been living here, they are in Myanmar. You know, we are being Rohingya. We did not have a separate camp. We didn't have a separate area for the Christians. So we have been living in mix all together, Muslim and Christians. And our identity was slightly hidden because of threat, because of the, we have believed in my families, the Christian families have been pretending to be as a Sufi, you know, those who are like folk, they play music, we call them bandar in our local language. So we believe in there as a bandari pretending to be a hidden Christians. And there are also some Christian just recently, it is after 2020 in Putidang, there are some Christian has been visible in Putidang, but they were tortured by the some of our Rohingya brother because of the because they exposed their identity being a Christian. So, and also the in every decades in Myanmar among us there were some fanatics group. There are some fanatics group that they are for faith based group, and they are known as a Furikya. The Furikya, they persecute the everyone, both Christian and Muslim. So they are kind of fanatics or armed groups, or they try to control the Rohingya using the name of religion. So back in Myanmar, our identity was kind of hidden. And also after coming back in Myanmar, in Bangladesh, we were forced. So it we became visible in the camps. And but our identity, the family census paper, family census or Gosarang we say. So in the identity, in that identity, we are approved by the government, Myanmar government, as a Christians. So even though we have identity, written identity paper as Christians, but because of our family, because of the threat, because of the security concern, we were not able to express ourselves. We have to worship hiddenly, even in Myanmar, to our village. I am originally from a place called Boli Bazar. It is under the Mondo district. So we were hidden. That's I remember that we were worshiping in a there was likely a home church in our home. So we gather on a Sunday for the worshiping.
And so because it's hidden, I assume it would be difficult to know this, but do we have any estimates for how big the Rohingya Christian population is?
Yeah, currently here in Bangladesh, so far I know, there's still some Rohingya still remaining in Myanmar, but currently here in Bangladesh, around 3,000 Christian individuals, estimatedly, so far I know, according to my my survey. So, and also there are some hidden Christians, maybe some hidden Christian that maybe I don't know. As we have come to know this last Christmas, that some Christian who have been hidden, they were away from the, because of the split, because of the influx in 2027, they were away from the community. They were not able to reconnect with their families. So since they have been living in a remote area, you know, there are camps in the 27 and 28 camp now in Bangladesh, refugee camp. So estimatedly, I know that 3,000 individual Christian families here in Bangladesh now. So maybe there are some more in Myanmar left there. Yeah.
Okay. But as I understand, the population of Rohingya currently in Bangladesh is 1.5 million. Is that correct?
Yes, according to the UNHCR, it is like 1.3 million. So there are some more, few hundred thousands that unlisted or unregistered yet. Yeah.
Okay. This is good to understand for context. And from a historical perspective, I'm curious to know, do you know anything about the history of Rohingya Christians? How long have there been Rohingya Christians? Is this before the Islamization of the Rohingya, or did this come later? What is the time period, to your knowledge?
Yeah, what I heard that there have been Christians, but they have been totally hidden. They never exposed their identity. Long ago, before maybe Islamism, there have been Christian in Myanmar, Christianity among the Rohingya, but because of threat, because of the problem, because of the security concern, they never expose themselves. Even though some Christian here in the refugee camp now, they are going to mosques. They are pretending to be Muslim. There is a big, this is happening. This is because of the security concern. Since they are not, all the Christian are not in one camp. Even though the ex-government who are Bangladesh, those who are not on rolling, they say that we have a separate camp. But the reality is there is no separate camp. Those, as a result, all Christian, the Christian are in a escalated in many camps. So they are not able to practice their faith openly. They have to pretend to be Muslim. They have to pretend. They have to hide their identity. So also in Myanmar, they have to hide their identity because of security issues. So I was, so far I know this is what I heard, that they are a big Christian, but they were totally hidden.
Okay. I mean, that's very interesting to understand. I mean, we've seen very similar things in European history as well, when people have to hide their religion. I do wonder, is it possible to pretend to be Muslim? Do Rohingya Christians understand enough from their community, from the Muslims around them, to be able to pretend to be Muslim? Or is this a very dangerous risk that they are taking?
No, they are pretending to be Muslim. The Christians are pretending to be Muslim because of their, since they are alone, a family around, a family in a block. You know, a camp is separated in 7 to 10 blocks, where in each block there are a few thousand individual lives. So since, for example, in one camp, there are several blocks. In one block, there is a family, and 99.99% almost a Muslim. So because of they cannot say I am a Christian because of they're surrounded, the neighbors are Muslim. And the Muslim, when the other Muslim heard that there is Christian, they know that there is a rumor spread all over the camp that some Rohingya Muslim converted into Christianity because of facilities, because of money. But this is not true. This is not true. As a result, we have faced several attacks. We will come there. So since the several attacks happened, several attacks led by the fanatics group, the faith-based fanatics group, they attacked. So because of this threat, because of life at the risk, so the families cannot say, I am a Christian. They have to pretend to be Muslim, and they have to go to the mosques. They have to go to tabligh just because of their life at the risk. But occasionally, they come to the church, they come to the Christmas, they come to the gathering occasionally.
Of course. But so my previous question is, do the Muslims ever discover that a Christian is pretending to be Muslim?
Yes. There are several stories that there some people discover that he/she was a Christian, and that he/she was abducted, beaten, tortured, and taken ransom. And then the family was later, with the help of the government, with the help of the camp authorities, we were able to relocate him in different camps.
Wow. I mean, so this is a terrible situation, and I want to understand how this happened. So first of all, you said that the Muslims had a rumor that you convert to Christianity for money. Why would they believe this?
So because of the, they believe that Rohingya is a nation with Sufism, Wahhabi. In Islam, there are two, three different groups. So Wahhabi is likely, they claim that they are pure Islam. And they claim that most of the Rohingya, they've been claiming that the Rohingya nation is a nation of Wahhabi. There is no Hindu, there is no Christian, there is no atheist, there is nothing. No Sufism. So, but according to my experience, I know that there are some Hindu, there are some even atheists in the Rohingya community, and there are Christians. For example, I am a Christian, and there are Sufism. There are those who bandari, we call a lot of bandari. But I know that there have been attacks. The bandari has been attacked by the other Rohingya. This is what I experience. I know I have seen. I am an eyewitness. So some fanatics group, they said we are working to protect Islam. We are working, but in the name of, they are using the name of the religion. And they are creating complete division among the Rohingya, disunity among the Rohingya. As a result, they spreaded the rumors that these people are leaving Islam, leaving religion in terms of facilities or money. That's why we cannot even say that we are Christian. So most of the people cannot say that we are Christian, even though they will be abducted. They think, oh, he has a lot of money. If we kidnap him, we may get a lot of money. This is happening in the camps now.
I see. And so this is fascinating to me that you mentioned Wahhabism. And for those in the audience who might not be familiar, Wahhab was an Islamic scholar. Wahhabism is the variety of Islam that rose to prominence in Saudi Arabia. So are you saying that Wahhabism is very common in Rohingya Muslims?
Yeah, they say 100% are Wahhabi among the Rohingya. No Christian, oh, wow. No Sufism. But they are lying. They are lying because I don't know why they are lying, but they're lying. This is they're lying because we know that in the Rohingya refugee camp, there are around 500 Rohingya Hindu currently, and Christians around 3,000, including the new arrivals. New arrivals in 2024 and 2025, and many more maybe on the way. I don't know because of the current situation in Myanmar. Yes. And there are atheists. I know there are. Feminism, there's some women I know that they and also in a conference like Dr. Jakir Nayak, he holds a conference about religion, and in the conference there is a man who claimed that I am an atheist, I don't follow any religion.
Yeah,
so there are atheists as well as
and so what I want to understand then is this culture, because you said that there were extremists and that there are these really aggressive groups, but I wonder, what is the percentage among the Rohingya Muslims? What percentage do you think are aggressive towards Rohingya Christians, are negative towards Rohingya Christians, and what percentage don't care?
What I know, what I experienced during my childhood, Rohingya is very welcoming nation, very welcoming, very peaceful nation. So far, I know, because my neighbors was very, they've been helpful each other to each other. They were peaceful, very loving to others. But currently, so we see some, maybe it is because of outside influence or I don't know, but very few, I cannot say that about the percentage. What I say is a very few people are controlling the Rohingya, whole Rohingya. Because they have access to the weapons that we cannot imagine. And because of very few, for example, in our camp where we have been living in the camps, Camp 2 East. So we have good relation with every Rohingya Muslim. And they love us. But after 2027 influx, only in our block, there are only 10 to 15 people, individuals, they become as a group, and that they have been controlling. They've been trying to control. They have been abducting. They have been killing peoples. So very few people. In my blog, there have been likely more than 10,000 people in our camp, in one camp. So only 10 to 15 people have been controlling the area. And they have been recruiting the groups. They have been recruiting youth. They have been forcing youth to join their armed groups. So the percentage is very low. Very few people are controlling the other Rohingya, peaceful Rohingya. As a result, because of threat, because of their security concern, because of if they move outside, so they may be okay. They say, okay, let it go. We may not. We may fall in trap if we go against these people, since they have access, to weapons, they have access, they have power. But the truth is, very few.
So, okay, but these groups, it sounds like they are quite powerful. So would you say that the majority of the Rohingya are afraid of these groups? Or are these groups absolutely. So small that... Oh, really? So they are afraid?
Yeah, the majority of Rohingya are afraid of this group. As a result, they cannot speak out against this group. Against the armed groups, against the powerful group. This is the problem.
Okay. So Is there anything that can be done? I know for the security situation, we're not going to name any specific group, but is there anything that can be done? If these groups are small, is it not possible for the other Rohingya to unite to push these groups out of power?
Yeah, this is now comparing to the last year. I mean, 20 before comparing to the change in the situation of political situation here in Bangladesh, and that situation is now more improved in the camps, the security concern. Because why? Because the Rohingya understand that we need unity. We need to speak out against injustice, against this those who are killing, those who are abducting, those who are creating conflicts inside the camp, fire in the camp, setting fire to the camps. So comparing to that, other 2021, 2022, 2023, so now in 2025 and 2025, so it is likely improving the situation, security situation, as government, Bakai Mutrutis, Bangladesh government is taking the issue very seriously, and the situation is improving, the camp situation is improving, and unity camps in unity is, it is Rohingya is being united with these issues because of, they said we need to speak out.
Okay, well, that's a very good thing to hear. And I want to go back to what you said. So the idea, if I understood correctly, the idea was that there would be a separate camp just for the Christian Rohingya. And you said that this has not been done. Is there any particular reason why this has not been done? And do you think it is possible in the future to establish a Christian Rohingya camp for safety?
Yeah, thank you for this concern. Just to highlight about what the government of Bangladesh says during the influx, the foreign ministry, they said that we have separated during the interview by the Indian media. When they have been talking, they questioned, the media questioned that whether about the camp, separate camp for the Hindu and Hindu. And the ministry, foreign ministry said that we have camp for a separate camp for Hindu and Christians and Muslim. I don't know why he spoke, why he mentioned that, but in the I have the video, I can send it maybe later. But he said that we have camp separate, and now this did not happen. And that time in 2021, 2019 and 2020, some of the camp authorities, they have been requesting us to for a separate, even though they have been requesting to go in a separate camp. And but because of we thought that if we go to the separate, we go in a separate camp, we will be, maybe we mess up, we may get more troubles, more attacks from the groups. But we refuse to go back. To go as a result, we have been attacked by the groups, and two Christians has been killed. And after that, January 27, 2020, the massive head attack happened towards my church, and two men, including a pastor, Tahir, has been killed, and a minor daughter was converted. And we have been relocated to a place called Transit Center, led by the UN, UNHCR, and they now this year last year December, we have a meeting with them with the UNHCR team, and they said we have to go back to the camp. So we said if they can ensure the protection, if they can make a separate camp and bring in all the Christians together in a separate camp, and give access like education, the church they're building, and facilities for women. And if they are ensuring this, all this, then we said that we will go back. We are ready to go back. But there is no hope. They said if you live in a separate camp, more troubles will come. But in 2020, we experienced that because we refused to go in a separate camp, we have been attacked. And Muslim, majority Muslim, they demonstrated against us that we don't want this Christian with the Muslim. Because they said that the Christian are making is Muslim into Christianity, the rumors.
Wow.
So there is no, there is uncertainty about separate camp, but they've been pushing the UNHCR stuff. There is a field officer, maybe. I don't know his full name. He was likely Abbe, or I forget the name. So he said that and also other protection officer was there at the meeting, and they said that okay, you have to go back to the camp. Even though we are in the transit center with the protection is about 6 years, and because of this discrimination, because of the discrimination and false information provided by some fanatics group, the Christian has a Christian has been left behind in the transit center, and other Muslim they get very very short result resettlement within 3-4 months, 3 or 4 months, but the Christian left behind for 6 years. After 6 years, they are now pushing us to go in a separate camp, as in the camp that we were kicked out. So we, as a result, we requested for the camp, separate camp, but there is no assurance. They said we have to go back to your own camp.
I mean, this is crazy to hear. Who is actually in charge of the camps, and who is in charge of the decisions for which camp a person can go to?
Yeah. We have been living in Camp 2 East, which is in Kutup Along. Since we come from in Myanmar for the second time in 2007, we have been living in Kutup Along, now known as Camp 2 East. And from that camp, we have been relocated to the transit center, which is camp, next to the Camp 7. And in charge of the camp is Triple RRC, who is in Cox's Bazar. But each camp has a separate assistant CIC, which is camp in charge. But the Triple RRC Rohingya Refugee Repatriation Commissioner, he lives in his office is in Cox's Bazar. He lead all the other in camp in charge. So mainly the camp in charge are the decision maker with the coordination of UNHCR, site management, and other NGOs and INGOs. But UNHCR has the separate. They have the power. They have the capacity to make decision as well as those who are faced with the protection issues. Bangladesh government with the help of Bangladesh government. I mean the local authorities. So UNHCR and the local authorities together take the decision.
Okay, so it's quite a complicated situation. But you're certainly suffering very much, and I wonder if you can go into a little bit more detail. You mentioned 2020. You mentioned that your community was attacked, your church was attacked, and unfortunately, some of your brethren lost their lives. I wonder if you can explain a little bit more about what happened exactly in that 2020 attack.
Yeah, the 2020 attack is not the first attack. Before that, our people has been arrested. Randomly, in middle of the night, some of the because of the misinformation given to the police or to the officers, and they came in middle of the night in 2014. School teacher who is late now, the pastor who has been killed. He was arrested. My father has been arrested with the false accusation as an illegal immigrant. He was sent to the prison, and then And again in 2017, during the service, a mob justice happened. A lot of people came from to our block and attacked us after the church service on Sunday. It was in May. It was May in May, in 2017. And again in 2018, we have faced attacks. Our children was knife stabbed, because of the just. Our children receive every day mockery, false accusation. Oh, you people, your father, you converted to Christianity, money. Yeah. They've been abusing because of hatred. So, and in 2019, in December, after during the celebration, we have been celebrating the Christmas. We have a cultural program as well as beside the worship service. So we gather all the Christian gathering in the church in Camp 2 East. And some fanatics group thrown the human dust to all the pastor house and the church member house in Camp 2 East, and we called to the police. They tried to attack, and the police went there, and they all the church, pastor's house was robbed away. All the belongings had been taken away by the groups, and we had complained. And in 2020 January, probably it was Miss Yangili, the UN special reporter. She was had entry was denied in Myanmar. So she came back. We have been reporting all these sufferings, all the years that we received, we have been facing to the UN agency, including the UNHCR, all of the human rights organization. And as a result, the special reporter also was aware of the situation, and she came back. She came to visit and hear our stories, the Christian stories. She visited our church in 2020, January, I think probably 2020 January. 2022 January, she visited us, and she highlighted the situation in during her press conference in Dhaka. So after her visit on 26, the alert of Rohingya, around 400 estimatedly, what I have seen, more than 400 youth, they come together and they've been starting. They set fire. They have been cutting down and taken all our properties. Church properties have been vandalized. Our church computers, device, my university certificate, all our school college certificates have been taken away, burned down. All our documents and everything. 25 Christian families shelters were burned down, cut down, and 7 women were abused, and 12 Christians were injured, including myself. We have been taken away from our camps to a CIC office, which is Camp Injured's office. And then the next day, I was taken, those reminded Rohingya Christians, they have been in the office. And even in the office, the Muslims, the Rohingya, they actually have been stoning them to the office, towards the office. It was early morning, you know, and it was winter, the season was winter. So it was cool, and my son was only 1 month. And the NGOs people has been taken in MSF Hospital, Ukiah Official Hospital, and some of them Cox Bazar. And Cox Bazar was, you know, when you are a Rohingya, the local hospital don't care about them. So we have been taken there. I was senseless when I was taken to the Ukiah Official Hospital. Then the hospital said we cannot. We have no treatment for Peter or the families here. So their condition is very serious. You have to take. So the Upazila Hospital referred us to Cox's Bazar City Hospital, Cox's Bazar Southern Hospital. And since our situation was worse, and we were taken to the Malumgat Christian Hospital. We have received treatment there. And then on the 27 January, morning, we have been taken to the transit center as because of protection issues by the UNHCR and UNHCR and the local block camp authorities. So after that, we have reported about the Christian the abduction. The pastor Tahir and his daughter was abducted in the mid of the night. It was likely morning time, early morning. And also another church member, his name is Kader Hussein. Because of his problem, he was a barber, so he was just to pretend after the attacks, he went to the mosque as I had. So he was taken away from the nearby the mosque, and he was killed, and the Tahir was killed, and the daughter. The minor daughter, who her name is Mizan, she was married away, a minor daughter. She was only 14. She was 14 years old. She was married away with an ARSA member, commander, a armed group commander. He was married away. And we were never able to speak with her. But now we are hearing that she divorced. She was able to flee away from the commander. Now living in a remote place for her security concern. I just heard. I was not able to speak with her.
Yeah.
So she's living in far away from the camps. This is what I heard. So the current situation is still worsening. and recently a Christian from Camp 27, he was abducted by the, it was not from, maybe not related to camp, but you know, abduction happened every day in Teknap camp. So he was abducted, and he was said that, oh, your people, your godfather has a lot of money, so give him tell him to give money. So after a ransom, he was freed in the middle of the night. This is what happened in the Christians. We are, for myself, the Christians, those who are in the transit center, they are not able to move. They are not able to go inside the camps. They are not able to meet their relatives by going to the camps. As a result, we are restricted. We are confined in a restricted area about 6 years, and the future is uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen. As the UNHCR said that they don't have money to support, to feed. And now, this is, we are 4 days now. We are without food, no ration, no food. They are supposed to provide food here in the transit center. But they said we cannot provide any food. The transit center will vandalize. We will break the transit center will be we are no more supporting the transit center. As a result, they did not provide any food, any ration. They said we have to go to the in middle of the camp to receive the ration. So because of our protection issue, the Christians and some more Muslims, they were not able to go to the inside the camp. Inside the camp, receive the ration from WFP and gas, LPG gas.
And I'm trying to understand why this is. Is this a Is there a prejudice against refugees? Is there a prejudice against Rohingya? Is there a prejudice against Christians? What is the reason for this?
Yeah, specifically, some of the armed groups, you know, in Bangladesh, in refugee camp, there have been a lot of armed groups among the Rohingya. When many people try to misuse the Rohingya, since they don't have job, they don't have access to the money or resources. So they are in desperate. We are in desperate. So anyone try to control, anyone try to misuse the Rohingya for their own benefits. So, and as a result, there have been some several groups in the Rohingya camps. But and also the detective, they has the information about the camp. And when the those detective came to charge the bad people, criminal gang, the blog leaders, they redirect from gang to Christian. They accuse the Christian as a gang, as a criminal. So as a result, police has a bad experience. So this may be the people. That's why. And at the same time, we cannot do what we want. So, but after the justification, the police or the detective found nothing. And but still, the police, everyone, the rumors spread it, and they think, oh, these people may be dead people. That so we should not take care of these people. And in about the hospital in general, when you are a Rohingya, it is not about Christian, it is not about Muslim, it is not about Hindu. In general, and when you are a Christian, when you are a refugee, they said, oh, refugee cannot do anything. They don't know the system, they don't know the rule. So we left them behind. Priorities, those who are educated, those who are fresh, well clothed, and yeah, this is how they take care. Most of the hospital take treat behaviors towards the refugees.
So I mean, this is terrible. Is there an alternative? I know you were talking about the Christian hospital. Are there specific places that refugees are able to go to receive proper medical care?
No. I am the eyewitness. I have experienced a lot, and I saw that because of the our delivery time, a pregnant woman, her delivery time it was delivery time, and they called to the hospital ambulance. Ambulance did decline, and the child died even in the transit center. Mm-hmm. It is maybe 2023. A woman, a delivery time. A woman say it was delivery time. It was mid of the night. We called to the ambulance. In the transit center, there is a basic treatment hospital, but not for the delivery. So, and it was the woman covered the area, and the baby was born. But unfortunately, because of the lack of caring, lack of treatment, lack of so the child died. So he deserved to be to live. The child deserved to live, but because of treatment, the child died. So this is everyday incident in for the refugees here in the camp. There is no special care. There is no special hospital for the refugees. And among them, in 2025, many clinic hospitals and facilities has been closed, showing the fund card, showing the shortage, fund shortage. And this year it is huge now. In every sector, they are showing the this reason, fund shortage.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, this is a very bleak situation that you're talking about. And I know this is not a solution at all, but this is something that we need to discuss, something that we need to understand. And this is the possibility of the Rohingya returning to Myanmar itself. I know that there has been some discussion about this. I know that Bangladesh is very keen for the Rohingya to return. I know the Arakan Army have been making some statements saying that they would welcome the Rohingya returning and so on. And the National Unity Government also has made these statements. From your perspective, is it realistic for the Rohingya to return to Myanmar, either today or, you know, in 5 years from now? Is that a potential solution to any of these problems?
Yeah, we have been hearing. For example, I am a refugee from 1992. We are known as an older Rohingya, but we have been repatriated in 2003, forced by the local authority. So around 33,000 older Rohingya who are known as a registered Rohingya have been waiting for the repatriation. It is 33 years, 34, 55, or 36 years now. And this did not happen. And the situation of Myanmar is very worse now. There is a civil war ongoing still now. And we've been hearing that the Arakan Army or the Janta, they both of them are trying to get attention from international by welcoming them. And we know that both of them are using the Rohingya as a human shield. So, and at the same time, they are trying to welcome the Rohingya refugee to the country. And this is actually I don't think this is actually going to happen. Because, within 2 years, around 200,000 or 300,000 Rohingya fled to Bangladesh. And still every day Rohingya is trying to flee from Myanmar to Bangladesh to escape violence. So this is happening every day, the borders. And so I personally from my opinion, personal opinion, I cannot see that that we have there is a way we can return. And you know, we have been reading about the ongoing election there. So I don't know how they are making this happen. Even majority of the citizens are denying, protesting against Janta. At the same time, they said that they are making the election, they hold the election. So we cannot see the ways, but we are really hopeful. The majority Rohingya, the Rohingya went to return home as it is Independent Day today. Also Rohingya have been celebrating the Independent Day since we are part of Rohingya. We have the right to celebrate and to like remember the day. But in this day, we are away from our country. We have been living in another country as a refugee. So we are really hopeful that whether Janta, whether Arakan Army, they should stop. They must ensure citizenship and restore all our rights that have been taken away. And I don't think they will do as soon. So there is no possibility. I cannot see any that within 5 or 10 years we will be able to go back to Myanmar.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that, but it's fascinating to me the way that you identify with Myanmar, because the Rohingya obviously have been persecuted within Rakhine State by the Arakan. Right. And what we saw in 2016, 2017, 2018 was obviously this concentrated, deliberate operation on the part of the Tamador, the Burma military, to go in and to exterminate the Rohingya and to force the Rohingya off their land. Myanmar as a country has hurt the Rohingya very greatly. And yet you continue to identify with Myanmar, and it sounds to me like a very large percentage of the Rohingya who are living in Bangladesh continue to identify with Myanmar. What is your feeling about the country of Myanmar? What is your hope for a future Myanmar with the Rohingya population in it?
We belong to Myanmar. We are part of Myanmar. So, and we are very hopeful that we are likely a football now. When we are going back to the when we are in Myanmar, they call us Bengali. When we are here in Bangladesh, they call us Burmese or Rohingya or Burmese people. This is true. We belong to Myanmar, and at the Myanmar, our government must welcome us. They should not kick us as food. They should not kick us. They should not call us color. We are the same people. We are the same citizen as other. So as other people enjoy the freedom or citizenship, our citizenship should be restored, and all our properties that been taken away should be given. And we have been treated as a citizen, and we should be given the facilities to contribute to the country, to the economics, as a as a good citizen. This is what our Rohingya deserve, and I deserve. I hope. Mm. So
I mean, I completely agree with you. I am curious though, and I know that this is outside a little bit of the scope of our discussion, but it is something that I think it's useful if we discuss this. Obviously, with these fake elections happening now in Myanmar, and also with the statements that the Arakan Army has made and the statements the National Unity Government has made, there's a lot of question about what would be necessary for the Rohingya. Obviously, because you have been oppressed and attacked for so long, you would want a guarantee of safety. You would want a guarantee of your legal rights and citizenship. And I'm curious, what do you think would be necessary for the Rohingya people to feel that they can return to Myanmar safely? Would you be happy with a guarantee by the central government in Naypyidaw? Would you require a guarantee by an international observing country or organization that would stay in Rakhine State and continue to monitor the situation? What do you think would be enough to guarantee the safety of the Rohingya people?
Yeah, thank you. Currently, there is no the outside country like international media. They cannot cover the situation. And before the deportation start or before they welcome in us, they should give it access to those who monitor this security situation, also the situation about the. They should I'm actually lost about from the question. Please repeat.
So it's what would be necessary or what would be enough for you to feel that your safety and your rights are going to be guaranteed and protected?
As I said, they should ensure whether government or Arakan Army or Janta, they should give an access to those who work for the rights, human rights, or monitor the human rights. You know, currently the Rohingya majority, what I experience or what I am hearing, they want a separate state, Rakhine State as a separate state for Rohingya. I am not agreeing. I am not going to be agree. I am not going to echo this this, into this agreement, mm-hmm. into this. But being a Rohingya, so the access to the religious freedom must be ensured. Mm-hmm. And they should behave same, equally. The Burmese, Buddhist, or whatever, the citizens should be behave equally, given access to education, higher education, movement to the freedom. Movement, we were not given freedom, movement freedom. Even we were not able to visit one village to another village those past years. And many investigator mechanism or, they are not able to go inside and deep research about the situation or they restricted. However, they highlight the situation. For example, you know about the Reuters reporter, they have been detained. Yes. Two of the Reuters reporter has been detained. Why they have been covering the areas or they have been highlighting the persecution or So also I have heard that R2P must be ensured. This majority of the Rohingya have been demanding that R2P has been must be ensured there before we go there, so that a UN agency or UN can monitor, they can ensure protection for the Rohingya citizens. But still, I don't believe even though R2P is there, if the government persecute, you know, this is my home, and I am the owner of the home, and I will do whatever I want. So even though if there is R2P, they cannot. But the government must ensure that, okay, welcome as a child. The way we welcome our children who by the misunderstanding when someone go away. So if they ensure that they welcome as a children of the home at the country, then that is possible that we can live there again. Otherwise, it will be like we have been repatriated in 2003, and my family has to come back Myanmar in 2007. So it will happen. We will be like we will be treated as a football.
Yes. I think that makes a lot of sense, and I find it very interesting that your position is that you do not endorse the idea of an independent Rohingya state. And I think that's probably a conversation that in another discussion we can jump into later. But it's certainly very, very interesting, and I completely agree with this. The question that I want to pose, though, is in the current situation in Bangladesh, in these camps, obviously, the majority of the Rohingya are Muslims. Like, clearly, from the numbers that you are giving, 99% at least are Muslim.
Yes.
And you say that the majority of the Muslim Rohingya are not aggressive towards Christians. They are just afraid of these extremist groups.
All right.
Is there anything that you think you can do to reach out to them, to try to educate them, to try to build a sense of community, because even in Islam, in theory, Christians are supposed to be protected in Islam. They're called Ahl al-Kitab. And this is not being respected. They are making, as you say, false accusations against the Rohingya, the Christian Rohingya, that you are getting money, that you are converting the Muslims and all these things. Do you think there is anything that you can do to raise awareness of the Christian Rohingya community safely?
Yeah. Absolutely, this is what we have been seeking for years now. We have been requesting the leaders, the activists, that we are Rohingya. First of all, we are Rohingya. Our religious identity is coming in second time. First of all, we are Rohingya. We have to be united. And as you said, we are actually. Even though we cannot go directly to the people now because of security issues, but I am actively working for the peace, to restore the peace, to restore the unity among the Rohingya. And the good thing is that the Rohingya were 99.99% are being illiterate, no education. There was no education, no access to the digital materials. Like internet, no social medias. Now, they're both in the social medias, both there are some bad impact and good impact are happening. For example, in 2024 December, a Rohingya Islamic scholar, like a growing young man. He has issues a fatwa against me and my brother Emmanuel and another church leader in Camp 13 to issues the fatwas to kill us, and they have attested and they have circulated photos of me, my photo, my brother, and another Michael, who has been accused with the blasphemy. He was in the jail for 7 months. He was granted bail from the High Court in Bangladesh. So, and now the social media spread it. At the same time, NSCR and other agencies, they launched an imam meeting, which is to counsel the imams, to restore the unity, to stop the bullying on Facebook, on social medias, to stop the spreading rumors or false information. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I am my youth from the Rohingya Christian community, they are also trying to send messages, but both the offline and online, that we Rohingya, everyone has the religions, they rights. They have religion is a basic rights, and anyone can be whether a Christian or Muslim or Hindu or Buddhism or atheist. It is his her personal right. And the Rohingya, as I was mentioning about education, there was no education, but now currently there are some community school, like private school, that run by the educated men and women, older people. And also some people are in touch with the Western people. They are providing education, quality education by the home base or community base. So I can see some improvement, some changes among the Rohingya, even though there are still a lot of abusive words towards me and my community. But in response, we'd say, God love you. We love you. Even though you can mock me, you can abuse me, you can hit me. But my scripture says, love your enemies. So we don't mind if you inbox me, if you with a bad word, with bad cliffs, we don't mind. So this is what I teach the growing generation here in my school, in my congregation. And also we are trying to build good relation. Even though they hate us, we love them. We say, we love you. We have to be united. We are in a desperate situation. We are like a boat that in the middle of the sea. When the boat sinks, we have no time to waste. Like, oh, he's a Christian, he's Muslim, we are in that situation. We are in the middle of the sea. The boat is sank, about to sink. So we need to protect each other. So we are trying, and we can see a little bit that changes are coming among the community. It is because of education. So the international community must give access to the higher education to the Rohingya, so that the changes are come among the Rohingya community.
Well, I think that's a very, very impassioned statement. I think. You paint an optimistic picture that there are these things that can be done, that there are these options that can be taken, if only the international community will listen and will take the necessary action. The potential to save lives, very literally, the potential to save lives, is there. As we are coming towards the conclusion, I also just want to understand a little bit about your current situation. I won't ask you exactly what your situation is and where you are located and how many other Christians are with you, because I understand the security situation is very serious. But I want to understand how serious and how dangerous would you say life is for you and for other Christians? I mean, you say this, the fatwa was issued for the audience. That's an Islamic ruling that is not binding strictly, but is binding on the followers of a specific cleric. That could be a very serious security threat to you. Your image was published. People know who you are. They could be targeting you. How serious do you consider the risk to yourself, and how serious do you consider the risk to your community to be right now?
Yeah. Here in the transit center, I have been attempted twice to choke me, but I was escaped. and the situation of myself, if any time anything can happen, since I am and my family, my brother, they are targeted, and armed groups are always behind us. The armed groups, those who are targeted, so, you know, they kill in a second. Now the Rohingya, some of the Rohingya fanatic group, they have access to very well-organized, like powerful weapons. They have access since they are, So anytime, anything can happen. So if they find me alone, they find me in a camps or in nearby the camps, they can, anytime, they can kill me. So we have to stay away from, we have to be alert, all of us in a situation like desperate situation, in a fear always inside of being killed. But we are not stopping. We are not stopping here serving. We will keep serving. We will fight for the rights for the Rohingya Christian community, since no one is speaking about this community. They are lost. So I am calling everyone to work for the peace, to work to restore the peace, to spread the peace message. But regardless of our religion, regardless of our religious identity, we are Rohingya. We must protect our Rohingya community. We must protect human being. We must work for the human being, for the peace.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I think with that we've covered quite a lot of territory. And I think we are helping to bring awareness to this very serious issue that might not be familiar to much of our audience. Of course, when we think of the Rohingya, we think of the Rohingya as a Muslim minority or group within Myanmar who are persecuted. But we have to recognize that within the Rohingya community, there are non-Muslims who are themselves minorities again and being persecuted. And so I am deeply grateful, Reverend, for you coming in and sharing your experiences. As dangerous as the security situation is for you and for your people, we are grateful to be able to raise awareness.
Thank you so much. What I want to say is, we are Rohingya. We are living in another country. Bangladesh is already an overpopulated country. We are very grateful to the people of Bangladesh, and the Rohingya relies on your donation. Since we don't have access to the workplace or earning money to support our family, so we rely on you, on your donation. So please don't forget the Rohingya community. Please extend your helping hand. I request you to stand in solidarity and speak out about the Rohingya rights to restore. And until we return to our motherland, please not stop your support for our people, so that we can build our future. We can help our children to build their future, so that they can contribute to the society. This is what my message is. Thank you for having me once again.
What a great conversation that was. You know, every so often, listeners share with me how deeply they've connected with a guest they heard on our podcast. Sometimes they've shared being so profoundly touched by what they've heard, they tell me they just wanted to reach out and hug the speaker when the episode ended. Hearing this kind of feedback, it's always real motivation for me and for our whole team, because it shows that even in this virtual space, we've been able to foster true heart-to-heart connection with this global community of listeners. Indeed, many of our guests have made extraordinary personal sacrifices in their efforts to create a better future for their society, and continue to do so every day, despite the many challenges they face. And so, if you've been touched in this way yourself from hearing a past episode, you might consider supporting the work of one of our guests directly. Such contributions not only provide material help, they also send a powerful message of solidarity and of shared humanity. To get involved, send us a message with your intention. Of course, you can always make a general donation at insightmyanmar.org/donation.
Oba yarananda dayananga na yarananya dayarananga podaba yarananga.